Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
100 400 or visit outsurance.ie. Real people, unreal savings. Outsurance, you always get something out. Based on a like-for-like policy comparison, the customer received a gratuity for their participation. Outbone is calculated less taxes and levies. Exceptions criteria, terms and conditions apply. Car and home insurance is underwritten by Outsurance DAC. Outsurance DAC, trading as Outsurance, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
If you or a loved one are in need of emergency care, you need to know you're going to be looked after quickly, professionally, and by a team of experts. BlackRock Health Emergency Departments offer fast, private, consultant-led emergency care in state-of-the-art surroundings at BlackRock Clinic, Galway Clinic and Hermitage Clinic, 7 days a week. Simply walk in or call 1-800-283-999 or visit blackrockhealth.com. BlackRock Health. Better together. Over 16s only. See website for opening hours.
It's almost 9 o'clock on RTE Radio 1 with Dundeel Motors, home to Ireland's trusted car dealerships. Switching to electric? Find the right EV for you on dundeel.ie.
That's our lot this Monday morning. Our broadcast coordinator was Shane Galvin. On sound, Paul Murnoch. Our editors are Moira Hannan and Pat Avranoch. Our series editor is John Burke.
Oliver Callan's up next. Brian Jennings has the news. It's 9 o'clock.
Good morning. The Hamas-run civil defence agency in Gaza says more than 50 Palestinians, including children, have been killed in overnight Israeli airstrikes. In Gaza City, 33 people were killed and more than 60 others injured after a school sheltering hundreds of displaced people was struck. The Israeli military said it was targeting leading terrorists in the strike. It said it had taken steps to mitigate the risk of harming civilians. Separately, rescuers said 19 people were killed in an Israeli strike in a family home in the north of the enclave. The World Food Programme's country director for Palestine, Antoine Reynard, said people are simply waiting to die in Gaza because charities cannot help the population with the level of service that is required.
People are beyond desperation. They are waiting to die. And that's exactly what's currently happening in Gaza, because we are not able to serve the population with the level of assistance that is required. The message that they gave to me was very clear. We can't move anymore. We need assistance to reach us.
The US President Donald Trump has said he will delay the imposition of 50% tariffs on goods entering the United States from European Union countries until July. Following a phone call with the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, Mr. Trump said he had agreed to extend the deadline to July 9th to allow for further negotiations. On Friday, Mr. Trump had threatened to impose the tariffs as soon as the 1st of June. Ms. von der Leyen said she had held a good call with Mr. Trump and said Europe was ready to advance talks swiftly and decisively. The European Commission spokesperson for economic security and trade, Olaf Gill, said the EU was ready to bridge the gap with the US.
Both sides exchanged documents for negotiation early last week. The distance between them was fairly substantial, but it's not an unbridgeable distance. And if President Trump's statement is the launch pad for us to get down to brass tacks and in a meaningful way try to bridge that gap, then we're ready to do so. Indeed, we've been ready to do so for several months.
Garda searches on a farm belonging to 56-year-old Michael Gain are continuing in Kenmare, County Kerry. The area was officially declared a crime scene 9 days ago when partial human remains were discovered in fields on Mr. Gain's farm where slurry was being spread. Last night it was confirmed the human tissue was that of Mr. Gain.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant. Looking for lower cost heating? Why not upgrade to an award-winning HVO biofuel ready Grant Vortex condensing boiler? Visit grant.ie.
Scattered showers and sunny spells at first this morning, but becoming cloudy and wet as outbreaks of rain move eastwards across the country during the day. The rain will turn heavy at times during the late afternoon and evening. Highest temperatures 11 to 15 degrees. in a moderate to fresh southwest to west wind, becoming strong at times towards Atlantic coasts. And that's all for now. We'll have news again at 10.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Health insurance made easy through It's for Women.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air till 10. It was a weekend of communion dresses, envelopes and desserts the size of your head, silage making and thunder, explosions of rain and then bits of sunlight and May processions as well. And the one constant in this country through every season, the blessed wind. It is Monday, the last one in the month of May. If you want to get it off your chest, whatever it is, the WhatsApp is open, 087 032 32 32, north, south, east, west, the whole lot. Everyone's welcome. And for your longer notions, the email oliver@rte.ie. Come on in and dry yourself. Now, later on, we will be very weather-focused as we meet a Met Air and meteorologist who, in his own time, is also a storm chaser. It is tornado season in the US right now, and Noel Fitzpatrick, he goes in pursuit of, for the purposes of photography and education as well, on the storms, and he captures these kind of awesome and terrifying images of these creations of nature which bring death and destruction to Tornado Alley, which is Oklahoma and beyond in the US. But he is an expert. It's not a hobby for people who don't know what they're doing and what they're facing. The Twister movies have attracted the tourists, but he is a scientist. 51551 is the text. Now, the weather is not looking great for us. I see the Irish Daily Mirror reporting this morning, put away the sun cream and break out the brollies. Met Aaron has warned it's going to rain every day for the coming week, and the June bank holiday next weekend looking like a washout. The coming week is set to start off with wet today, little respite from the rain, and the day's ahead. It'll feel more like March than May regarding the temperatures. We needed the rain, but did we really need this much of it? And what are we going to, what did we ever do to deserve this? Ireland, though, we have great indoors, and some of us are indoors watching the telly. Oh, it's very hard to watch some of the matches, though, with the rain splattered across the cameras as it was at the weekend. Extraordinary weekend in Gaelic football. Three of the provincial champions lost their opening group matches. That is how wild and exciting this football championship is in 2025. We know Galway lost to Dublin last weekend, the Connacht champions, but Tyrone beat Donegal, a great win for them at the weekend. And of course, Leinster champions Louth, who are having the season of their lives, went down to Monaghan. Oh. But nobody is out yet, however. Kerry's the only one to carry on undefeated in terms of provincial champions. They beat the Rossies last weekend. Not looking good for the Rossies. And Eamon Sweeney is writing on The Independent this morning, whisper it, but this year's hurling fair badly needs a dose of football excitement. This is like going down into the rabbit hole vortex altogether. Football is the main event and hurling is the sideshow this season. Ireland's beautiful game needs two outstanding provincial finals to change the balance of power back in its favour. This is the kind of dead rubber matches that we've been watching over the weekend in hurling, which used to be the powerhouse. And we used to say, well, if only football was exciting, half as exciting as hurling. He says, if Cork and Galway don't rise to the occasion in a fortnight's time, hurling could face a long, lukewarm summer playing second fiddle to its once ugly sibling, which is what football was seen as. And it's a scenario, as he points out, which seemed crazy 12 months ago, but football is the revelation and hurling is underwhelming in comparison. Just two genuine contenders remain in hurling. He means Limerick and Kilkenny, of course. The Treaty are the white hot favourites. The quest for Lee McCarthy could pale next to that for Sam Maguire, because half a dozen football teams possess genuine claims to the title and will for some time. And he concludes, the revolutionary spirit of football's new model armies has turned the GAA world upside down. Galway and Cork will have to rescue the season and the summer for hurling. In women's football, it's as you were, it's not as exciting there, unfortunately, although Kerry did have an exciting finish. They retained the Munster title and Galway retained the Connacht title. Not a scort in sight. Well, it never was in football, but it's gone from the women playing hurling as well forever now too. And if that wasn't enough, there's more good news for Tyrone over the weekend. The Sunday Times reporting that the DUP commissioned a report to find out the exact Ulster links with Donald Trump's vice president, J.D. Vance, because he's a self-declared Scots-Irish. That's where he puts the hillbilly in his hillbilly elegy. And there was a John Vance in Tyrone, and they thought, well, he was probably a planter who arrived from Scotland, and they may have had descendants who went over to the Appalachians and started the Vance American ancestry. But the historians went through and searched, and they found zero links between this Vance and the JD's family. So the DUP hoped to present him with a shiny document proving his Ulster heritage, but it turns out the Veep has no Irish ancestry whatsoever, despite those shamrock socks in the Oval Office on St. Patrick's Day. So Tyrone is off the hook. They would be very, very happy with that altogether. Now, a change of gear, friends, because we are going to take an early break today. We will return with a sister of the Dublin teenager, Daniel McAnaspey. Now, that name is familiar to you, isn't it? Because Daniel was murdered 15 years ago while in the care of the state. And it had never happened before, a minor killed while he was supposed to be under the protection of this country of ours. He was 17 years of age. He was in a lot of danger and should have been in specialist care. And there was lots of recommendations. And his family have loads of questions as to how and why Child Protection Services in the HSC, as it was at the time, let him down so often and so badly. And they beg your attention this morning, basically, because the other week they finally had an inquest. The murder was in 2010, but the inquest was only in the last few weeks. And it was during the hearing there that the family first heard about various failures to look after a kid who was supposed to be in the care of the state. So stay with us. We will be back very, very shortly. 51551 is the text.
Text 51551. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
How's it going, new gas boiler?
Bord Gáis Energy local heroes never have to make epic journeys to get to you because they're local. And if you order a gas boiler installation right now, we'll give you €250 off your new boiler. So book yours today on localheroes.ie. T's and C's apply.
Tá an dlí maidir le Jonu Orgán i gCathrú. Ón 16 meitheamh be gachtain a fásta in éirinn ina iontóir Orgán nar a aon siad bás. Cáró sé seo le bathadaíní a hááil agus a athrú go hiomlán. Be an chócht agat, pé rud atá ceart duitse a rannú. Leabhar le do theaghlach agus le do chairde chuna chinntiú gúil siad ar an eolas faoi do rogha. Fáid tuile eolas faoin athrú seo ag gov.ie/organdonation. Teachtaireacht ó Rialtas na hÉireann.
I spent my life fighting for what I believe in. For justice, for equality, for an end to poverty. And I'm not about to stop now.
Never stop fighting for fairness. Leave a gift to Oxfam in your will. Search Oxfam Ireland Gifts in Wills or call 01672762.
Coming up on Today with Claire Byrne.
Coming up this morning, they're slow and dangerous to overtake. Should we follow the lead of other EU countries and ban tractors from motorways? Plus, it's frequently shunned in favour of avocado toast and has been described as a heart attack on a plate. Brian O'Connell asks if we're witnessing the end of the full Irish breakfast. And we'll be joined by our parenting expert, Dr. David Coleman. Get in touch with any questions you might have by emailing todaycb@rte.ie.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Get peace of mind for your health insurance through It's for Women.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, welcome back. Daniel McAnaspey was the first child to be killed while in the care of the state. Daniel had 20 different care placements in the 15 months before his death. State agencies, they knew he was in danger. They knew he needed secure accommodation, even perhaps abroad, for his own protection. However, he was repeatedly failed by many state agencies. And in 2010, at the age of just 17, he was murdered in a park. His inquest was only held this month and it recommended a review of child welfare services, among other recommendations too. His older sister, Katrina McAnaspey, joins us now. Katrina, welcome. This has been a very long ordeal, hasn't it, for you and your family? Can I begin where, when you and Daniel, he was Dano to the family, wasn't
he? Yeah, he was.
Dano. When you were growing up, Finglas was home.
Yeah.
What are your memories of home in your childhood years?
We were young, we were all together. Happy times, but hard times as well.
How many of you, in terms of siblings, were in the family?
There's six of us.
And you were a couple of years older then?
Yeah, I'm Daniel's older sister, so I'm 4 years older than Daniel.
As you say, hard times as well. So there are happy memories. You and your siblings are taken into care in kind of stages, is that right?
No, we all went together. They came to me, Mum, and it was going to be a big family home. And my Mum could come with us, so we'd be all together.
And it was just your Mum at this stage because...
Yeah, my Dad had passed away.
He had died. And you were very young.
Christmas Day in 96.
Christmas Day?
Yeah.
Can I ask what happened to
him? He had a heart attack.
Really?
Yeah, so that's why my Mum, obviously, she had six kids under the age of 10 on her own. And she fell on hard times herself. So that's why we ended up in...
Naturally there. Enough to difficult to survive losing your partner in life on a Christmas day with so many small children. And then your mother becomes unwell.
Yeah, yeah. She turned to drink, you know. So she did come with us to the house in Montpellier. We were all together and we were told we'd stay together. But unfortunately, my mum, you know, it was quite hard for seeing her kids, obviously, kind of taken off her.
Yeah.
So she turned to drink and she went to rehab, but... She came out, she wasn't allowed back to the home with us, so...
Devastation that, again.
Yeah, so that took an effect on her, so she turned to alcohol, so...
Addiction essentially kills her.
Yeah.
What age are you when she dies?
I was 17.
Daniel, he wasn't even a teenager at this point.
No.
What happens then? Because you're kind of, do you break up as a family? What initially
well,
occurs?
Well, we were still living in Montpellier as a family, like as brothers and sisters, you know, and we were told we'd stay together. But unfortunately, when my mum left, we kind of started playing up. You know, we were told we'd be with her. So when she didn't get to come home to us, to the house, we kind of all started playing up, you know. I was missing school, I was going off with my friends and... Then eventually they just start taking us one by one out of the house. I was me first, then my sister, then me, I think it was Daniel. And then from that, there was me two younger brothers and sisters. They were left.
And is they the HSE? Because they're responsible for child welfare at the time.
Yeah.
Daniel, what was he, or Dano as you knew him, what was he like as a kid when you were all still together?
Oh, he was so funny. He just wanted to make everyone laugh all the time. Like, you couldn't be around him without laughing. Everything was a joke to him and he just wanted everyone to be, like, laugh all the time.
You were all close?
Yeah, very close.
But were you able to put manners on him at all?
Yeah, he would listen. Yeah, he would, mind you. But then when I moved out, you know, his older sister is gone now. His mum is gone. So he found it very hard because we were really close. So he did find it hard.
Everyone found it difficult. Yeah. I mean, you turned to drink yourself.
In your
early teenage years.
Hanging around parks. Yeah. So, yeah, you just want your family. Like, so my mother, like, you know, as much as she had her own problems, but we still loved her, you know.
She just had an illness, you know, she was in grief. She had the illness of addiction.
Maybe if they, you know, said that the help they she could have got as well, maybe.
How do you get your life together? Because you do very quickly, don't you? Thankfully, the
well, I did. I ended up in a girls' hostel in Ballymun. I had left school at that point. I wasn't going. I just kind of gave up. But I went there and I just kind of turned my life around by the help of Finola Dolan. She was brilliant.
Was Finola Dolan?
She was the like ran the girls' hostel. So she would have been in our family previous to my own brothers and sisters. My two aunties lived there before us many years ago. So
she organised education, everything for you, did she?
Yeah, she got me back into school and I ended up doing me leaving. And then I was still after that, I was saying I was leaving. She just kept pushing me and I was the first Mac and Aspie to do me leaving cert.
You must look at that kid that you were back then.
I do.
What an achievement.
Well, yeah, I wish I had done further, but I got to me leaving, so I'm happy with that.
With everything that had gone on. So you got your life together. Nikita was another younger sister of yours.
Yeah, she came then to live with me in the girls' hostel. She also done her leaving as well.
And how stable was your lives together at that point?
Well, we had each other, so it was kind of good, you know. Mm. And we had each other, like that Daniel and my brother Keith, they were very, very close.
Yeah.
So they had each other. And then when they got split,
yeah,
that was really, really hard for both of them. One went to live with my auntie Pamela and, well, Keith. And then obviously Daniel was moved around. That's when it kind of starts.
Because we can see when you got help, you and Nikita, that your life comes together and you go on to have a normal life despite the horrible trauma and grief in your life. The documents that come out of the inquest show that the failings really begin for Daniel when he's taken into care, isn't he? He loses education yeah. effectively as a result of simple things not being noticed, like yeah. he had dyslexia.
Yeah, like in the inquest, like we heard a child that has dyslexia, you should be second class, you know, where that they should have known. But Daniel yeah. was like...
And it's an easy thing to sort out, to yeah. educate people with dyslexia.
So, I think he was like 14, 15 before that came.
And that's when they realised, but at that stage he can't read or write.
No, and that's from a very young age, that's all he ever wanted to do.
It's very sad because he liked school.
Yeah, yeah, he really, really did. He wanted to learn.
Hmm.
And, you know, obviously his little mind, and he didn't realise, why can't they? But he was never told. He obviously knew he couldn't read and write, and that, like, he was embarrassed about that.
Really?
Yeah, he was very embarrassed about that. Like, so that's one thing he really wanted to do, was to read and write.
Like, to carry that shame around him, it's just appalling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because that's the simplest thing in the world to fix. And it was just dyslexia. Lots of people
yeah.
have very, very intelligent people as well.
Yeah.
He had a positive regard for school. He leaves school, obviously, because he's not taken care of there, and he ends up living in the streets, essentially. He's even attacked quite dangerously, isn't he?
Yeah, he got stabbed when he was 14 in the neck.
In the neck?
Yeah, in the neck, roaming the streets of the city centre.
He ends up in Temple Street Children's Hospital.
He did, yeah.
Where was he living then at that stage? Do you know where he was sleeping?
No, I'd imagine it was the out of service. But after that, that's when my auntie Sabrina took Daniel.
You had great aunties.
Yeah, they were brilliant and still are brilliant to us.
And I'm sure they had their own things going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they had a lot of trauma in their own lives, you know, but they stood by us all.
So Auntie Sabrina's trying to take in Daniel around this time.
He's yeah.
been attacked and injured on the street. He doesn't have any school. But then Daniel, being a nice kid, he doesn't really want to be a burden to Auntie Sabrina. Is that right?
No, he was in with my other aunties, a couple of them before that. But like that, no space. They had their own kids. You know, they still took him. But after then, the attack on him, Sabrina did take him, and he lived with Sabrina for like 2 years.
Right.
And she got him into Foss, the Outreach Centre.
Yeah.
He was doing well, but it broke down again because, like, no one came to Sabrina to see how Daniel was, see were they okay. He was just left there, and
there was no follow-up or connection to who...
Not really, no, no.
And there's an incident in the Foss course, which again comes back to the shame of his dyslexia, not being able to read or write, and this has a profound impact on him.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, like that, he wanted to read and write, and there was, like, obviously a group in his Foss, and he was just got embarrassed, like, if he had to read out or...
He was asked to read something out loud, was that?
Yeah, it was something like that. And like that, he was embarrassed that he couldn't do it, like, so that he left.
He leaves the court, and that's the only stable thing, really.
That really was,
so
yeah.
So naturally, he ends up back on the streets, about 15 years of age. People will be familiar with the chaotic life of people in this area, particularly who work in this area, someone with no education, no work. He's a young teenager. Drugs are readily yeah. available on the streets, and that's
and
what
that's,
happens.
And that's what he turned to, yeah. He, you know, he's a 15-year-old on the streets. You know, all he's looking for is a family, somewhere safe. He had us as a family, but, I mean, he knew, he felt, always felt that he was a burden to us, like, as in...
You were getting on with your life. No.
Yeah, and, you know, he knew there was never room, and he just wanted the HSE just to provide him with security, you know, so...
Did you have much contact with him during that time?
Yeah, all the time. You wouldn't, you know, he was always around us.
Yeah.
He
really desperately wants help. He's taking tablets, smoking cannabis. There was a suicide attempt.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I heard it in the inquest.
You didn't know that until now, really?
Yeah, I didn't know that about the suicide attempt. I heard that in court, so.
What do you know about it? Is he taken to hospital? Does he get any care?
I think he was taken to hospital, yeah, to Temple Street, and there was nothing they could do for him or something. So, again, he was left on the streets.
He's back out even after that.
Mm. And that's when I think he knew himself he needed help and he wanted to help. And
along the way, the HSC appoints, or there's someone appointed by the courts, is that right, the HSC, to represent Daniel in the legal proceedings. He's not taking drugs, I believe, for this period.
No, they drug test him and it came back clear.
So he was fighting to live and
he
to survive.
He really was.
How does he get someone appointed to him in the end? What?
Well, Aileen was appointed to all of us, I think, when my mum passed away. So we were...
I see, there is a contact there.
Yeah. We didn't need her anymore, so she was gone. But the social workers went back and asked her for help to be Daniel's voice.
Okay.
So that's how she comes back on the scene.
So little bits of the system work here. And Aileen Dunn is her name.
Yeah,
Formidable, brilliant woman.
Yeah.
And really cares about
her job.
She
really did, and she really tried her best.
She had lovely things to say about your brother.
Yes, and she got very, very upset in court.
In the inquest.
A couple of times.
What did she tell you at the inquest about Daniel?
He was like that, funny, like that. He wanted help, and she knew that. Mm. And she was his voice, and she, like, Daniel kept saying to her, like, I really need somewhere to go, and she fought for that, and it never happened.
She said he didn't have a bad bone in his body, and that was important because when he and the way he's killed in the end, all sorts of rumors swirl about anyone who is even just adjacent to drugs or being
a lot of people, has came out and kind of said Daniel was murdered over a drug debt. That's not true.
Totally false. Yeah.
Daniel was in the, like, ended up in Blanche that night to meet a girl and just came across these two guys, and that's why he was killed. Like, but it was nothing got to do with drugs or anything like that.
Aileen Dunn, nobody really works harder than her. She pushes for secure accommodation over and over again, doesn't she?
Yeah.
How badly is the state failing in this regard? How many attempts are made to get him accommodation?
There was like 3 or 4 applications, and every one of them were refused. And she said he met all the ticks that for someone to be in a secure unit. Daniel met each and every one of those ticks for him to be in a secure unit.
Because he was in danger?
Yeah.
And repeatedly the state has told over and over.
What child asks to be locked up? You know, he asked that.
Yeah.
For, you know, he wanted help, and that was the only way out. Lock me up, help me.
Again, at the time, it's not TUSLA, which is the organisation people are familiar with these days. It's the HSE Care Committee. They're told 3 times in the year before he's murdered that he needs somewhere safe. But there was no bed. Is that the reason?
This is what we've been told, there was no beds available for Daniel.
There was talk about sending him to Sweden to a treatment care.
Yeah, Sweden. And that was refused.
There was a clinical psychologist who spoke to the inquest, and he met Daniel 20 times, I think it was. You'd never heard from this person before.
I never heard his report, and that shocked me.
What did you find out?
A lot. That Daniel had post-traumatic stress disorder. He had the... I'm forgetting the word. he had a few things going on, and just... One that stuck out with me was the fact that he was in court the day before Daniel was murdered, like saying this child needs to be put away, like locked up for his own safety. He's not
the day before.
The day before. And that shocked me.
And this took 15 years for you to find out.
Yeah. And he had said in his report that if he didn't get anywhere safe, that he wouldn't make it 12 months. And the next day, Daniel's murdered.
It's extraordinary. He knew exactly what was going on. And I believe that psychologist had never written that in a report before about a kid in these circumstances.
Yeah.
That's how much danger Daniel
was in.
McInaspy was
and
in.
And I was, that has stuck with me since today at court, because like I blamed myself for many, many years.
Oh God,
You know, but it's kind of given me, I shouldn't blame myself, because it was HSC that should have been really protecting him, not me. He was under their care.
It's very clear now. How do you know in February 2010 that Daniel is missing?
you couldn't get through to him.
Right, because you were so used to contact.
Yeah. And from there, yeah.
He's missing for quite some time, isn't he, before you find out what happens?
12, 13 weeks.
What are those weeks like?
Oh, morning to night, we searched fields, ditches. We searched the whole of Blanchardstown, day in, day out. There wasn't a day we did not go out. And I had a young daughter at the time, and she didn't get to see her mammy for 3 months because my focus was to find Daniel. So that, you know, it took a lot on us, searching every day. Like, we were never going to give up, but...
And 3 months later, you get the worst news.
Yeah, that he was found in a ditch.
Do you remember being told or how you found out on that day?
Well, I think they came to us and told us they found a remains of a body. So obviously it took a few days to say it was Daniel. But yeah, I was happy that we had him.
Really?
Because we've been searching. I was devastated that what happened to him, but we had him home, you know, with us.
So you knew that he had been murdered, but the body was moved.
Yeah.
And that's when he was finally tracked down. When it occurred, I presume you always had hope that he would have a normal life at some point.
Yeah.
Were you always fearful? Did you always half think this might happen?
Not murdered, no. I always knew he was in danger, hanging around town.
Yeah.
I suppose there was always danger for Daniel, you know, where he was hanging around, but it was still a shock to us that he was murdered.
Teenage boys, 17 years of age, they don't get murdered every day in Ireland, thankfully. It was a brutal murder. The circumstances of moving the body were horrific. Two men responsible were convicted. There were many trial delays here, which must have been very difficult for you as well. Richard Decker from Blanchardstown in 2017, he's convicted of murder. He was sentenced to life in prison. This was after a retrial, and then he'd an appeal that reached all the way to the Supreme Court. That was rejected just 3 years ago. Trevor Noon, also from Blanchardstown, was convicted of manslaughter. He was sentenced to 13 years. He served 6 years and was released in 2023. Extraordinary. This must have made your grief ever more difficult.
Yeah, it is. It's like he's living his life now. We're still fighting for our brother, Daniel. No, we're Daniel's voice now, but he's out.
Trevor Noon is out.
He's out now, like,
Richard,
you know.
Decker is still in prison.
Yeah.
Did you ever find out why they did it?
They're evil. They've done a lot of things to other people, you know. Daniel was just out there having a kid, trying to meet a girl, and he just happened to meet this, and...
And that's it?
They thought Daniel had nobody, like family, or he obviously mentioned he lived in care or whatever, and they just...
An opportunistic killing. The fight for justice then turns to how the state didn't protect him. The murders in 2010, the inquest has only just happened. Very upsetting to go through it all again.
Yeah. Just brings it all back, and, you know, like, obviously we know about the murder and we knew a lot, you know, but I was just shocked in the inquest to hear some stuff I didn't even know, like the doctor's report, and just like, it's just horrible.
Like there are two trains of justice here. You've had the criminal one, and those people have criminal responsibility, but then you just have the care the state should have provided and they didn't. Mm. But it was, a moment of justice to have a jury agree with you.
Oh yes, that was... And I'd like to thank the jury. Yeah, it was great that we had them on our side, you know, and they could see how wrong Daniel was let down, you know. So it was really nice that they were on our side.
So their overall verdict, obviously, unlawful killing. But the recommendations they gave is that the state should carry out a review of its funding to child protection services by TUSLA to ensure it has the ability to keep children safe. They said the child's voice should be front and centre. That was really important to you, wasn't it?
Yes.
Does the state today, that was 2010, it's now 15 years on, does the state have the ability, the HSC, TUSLA, to stop this from happening again?
I really, really hope, but I've... you know, as you said, Daniel was murdered in 2010. We're now 2025 and there's still kids waiting for beds. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the HSC when that happened to Daniel, Tusla took over and nothing has changed. In all those years, you think something would change.
In terms of the level of care.
Yeah.
The inquest heard there are 4 young people who've been approved by the High Court for special care. They still were awaiting placement at the time of the inquest. And we also heard that due to a lack of staff, only 14 of 26 specialist care beds in the state's 3 facilities are open. We only have 26 beds. We can only open 14.
Yeah. That's shocking.
It is genuinely shocking.
It really is.
Considering what's happened already in the past, what do you want to happen next?
I really, really hope Tusla wake up and help these young kids, because it won't be long before someone else ends up dead. Like, and I really, really don't want another family to have to go through this again, because the heartache we've went through for 15 years, I just couldn't imagine another family going through it. It's really sad. So I really hope they open their eyes and things really, really change, you know.
That's for the present and future kids in care. What do you want the state to say to the McAnaspey family?
We've never had an apology off them in 15 years. They've never came to us. They've never offered us counselling. They've never offered us, any of my family, to see how we've done in these 15 years. Mm. Nothing from them.
You could do with counselling?
Yeah, honestly, I could. You know, it's 15 years, but, you know, they probably thought we were going away. But we're not going away, you know. We're still fighting for Daniel's voice and we will continue to do that.
It seems like a simple request, doesn't it? A formal state apology.
Yeah.
For failings that a jury has agreed with of our fellow citizens.
Mm.
It's very clear that the failings have been laid out. That's all you're looking for.
Yeah.
Are you going to take on the HSC for the failings of the past as well?
It was never, ever in my mind. But after the inquest and what I heard and how bad they failed Daniel, that's something I'm looking into.
In terms of a legal, perhaps,
yes.
A legal action?
Yeah.
Because you were not told so much about his care and the failures of the care.
You know, and they need to be held accountable. So, you know, I really think they need to, be held accountable. And I'm, you know, as I said, we never got a sorry. We've never been offered support, help in 15 years. So, I am going to.
People will be shocked by that. Let's go back to Daniel, because he would have been 30, wouldn't he, 2 years ago?
32 years ago, yeah.
Your family came together for his what would have been his 30th at the grave. What did you do that day?
We got a big banner. We brought champagne with his picture on it. Yeah, we just celebrated him. Sad, but we had all our little kids with us that never met Daniel, but they all know him.
Go ahead, yeah.
And they all singing and, you know, let balloons off for him. And it was quite hard, but seeing our little ear kids now known of their uncle or their cousin celebrating his life, it was lovely to see, but also very hard.
Yeah. But they get to know him a bit, don't they?
Yeah, they like, you'd ask any of the children in our family, Daniel, and they would all tell you, they all feel like they've met Daniel, you know, but they haven't, but they'll talk like they did.
That's a lovely scene that you're painting for us, and all the McAnaspeys, you're a close-knit family still.
Oh, yeah.
And all gathered for little Dano.
Yeah. Sad, we do it every year, but we made that one special because, you know,
of course, yeah.
He would have been 30.
He was only 17. How are you now? How are you in your life?
I'm good. You know, I have 2 kids, so all good. But, you know, last week, you know, it's bringing a lot back. So I'm just trying to take a step, you know, for myself.
Yeah.
But
it must be incredible, because I think one of your kids only turning 17 at the moment.
Yeah, that hurts me at the minute. I'm scared just to see her, you know. Her age was Daniel's age when he was murdered. So it's quite, you know, don't do this, don't do that, don't go there. You know, it's not her fault. But at the same time,
she's still a kid to you.
Yeah, and you never get over that fear of something bad happening.
Really, that's still in there.
Oh, yeah. And when you have a daughter that age, it yeah, that fear will never go. I don't think it ever will.
You're an extraordinary woman, you know that.
Thanks.
And Nikita, who came with you here today as well, like, incredible woman. To get through that, it's just extraordinary. But to keep on fighting at the level you're doing at it now, we can only wish you well. I know it's been a difficult time, even coming to chat to us today.
Thanks for having us.
Not at all. Absolutely amazed by you. And I'm delighted to hear that everything is well in your life. And we can just wish you well.
Thanks very much.
He'd be very proud of his big sister, I'm sure.
I hope so.
And for the and the work you're doing for the other kids as well. You couldn't do any more. Katrina McInaspie, thank you so much. And a reminder to people out there that supports are available on rte.ie/helplines.
Email Oliver at rte.ie.
Lights, Camera, Classics with the RTE Concert Orchestra. Experience sweeping classical music from movies including Sleeping Beauty, Moulin Rouge, Four Weddings and a Funeral, Fantasia, and more. Maestro Stephen Bell conducts soundtracks from blockbusters like Dunkirk, Fatal Attraction, 2001 A Space Odyssey, and Titanic. Live at the Helix on Saturday 31st of May. See rte.ie/co for more. Lights, Camera, Classics with the RTE Concert Orchestra. RTE, your public service media.
At ESB, we're delivering for Ireland, reducing carbon dioxide output from our electricity generation by 65% over the last 20 years by upgrading our generation fleet and adding more renewable energy sources. And with over €1.4 billion invested in critical energy infrastructure last year, we're helping to ensure a cleaner, more secure and reliable electricity system now and into the future. Find out more at esb.ie.
Even though Jack kept on whinging about his sunburn all yesterday evening, all last night, and all this morning, you're not going anywhere without him. Because let's be honest, he's still the bloke who spent weeks listening to how heartbroken you were about Sinead. Even though everyone knows, you broke up with her.
If you're abroad this summer, look out for each other and you'll make the right memories. For more info, go to ireland.ie/travelwise. Brought to you by the Government of Ireland.
Now, as you heard from our conversation with his sister Katrina, Daniel McInaspie's family, they're calling for a full state apology. That is a new call from them today. So we are getting in touch with the Taoiseach's office, and we'll also talk to the Department of Children, Disability and Equality to ask them basically if they have any plans for this apology to the family. And just to repeat, the jury at the inquest into Daniel's death returned a verdict on unlawful killing, but they also recommended that the state carries out the urgent review of its approach to child protection and welfare. We have a statement in from Tusla. They told us currently 14 young people are in special care across three dedicated units. They say that's just 0.2% of all the children in care. And three young people are awaiting placement. So that's down from the four that we heard during Daniel's inquest. Tusla goes on, we hope to be in a position to increase our capacity back to 15 in the next week and to admit one of these three young people. If fully staffed, the current units could accommodate up to 26 young people. Now, just for context, the inquest heard that 70 beds were recommended in 2014. So at the moment, the capacity is going back up to just 15 and we need 70. And that's 10 years ago since that figure. Tuzla goes on to say, a key challenge is the recruitment and retention of the inadequate number of skilled professionals to provide this highly specialised care. We're working with colleagues in the Department of Children in securing a new enhanced grade for staff in these roles. I don't know, I think that means to pay them more. And they say the second significant challenge is the increasingly complex needs of a small cohort of vulnerable young people. Well, of course, if they didn't have complex needs, they wouldn't need that secure specialist care. And a reminder, because we did touch on difficult subjects there, supports are available on rte.ie/helplines. Now, a lot of messages are coming in from listeners, and we will come back to that before we finish up today. But I want to take a pause and go to something else, because in good and bad times, of course, particularly if you're in the doldrums and going through a bad story, we love to chat about the weather to fill in the gaps. And our next guest takes that to the next level entirely. You'll have seen the storm chasers featured in film and documentaries like Twisters, which is such a good sequel, where the enthusiasts in pickup trucks pursue tornadoes around the United States. It's a very dangerous pursuit, but it's also very serious, and there's lots of science at the heart of it. And it is storm season right now. And one of the very few Irish participants joins us this morning. He's a photographer and a research meteorologist with Met Aaron. Thank goodness, it's an expert. Noel Fitzpatrick, welcome.
Thank you very much. Nice
how
to be here.
How are you doing?
Very good, thanks.
Do you remember how you realised that you love the weather more than the rest of us, that you really love the weather?
I think I was always a bit afraid of thunderstorms when I was younger.
Yeah, good.
And then I think that made me want to understand them a bit more. And then I think like a lot of people of my age, I saw Twister, the movie, and that kind of sort of clicked with me. Oh, I can do science and also something really exciting at the
same
time.
You seem too young to have seen it. It must be years after it came out.
Very kind. I think got up on the right side of the bed this morning, maybe.
You're from Sligo.
I am from Sligo, yes.
Oh, the weather. I know people who live in Sligo, they talk about this.
Yes, we get lots of weather. And so I first-hand experience of that. And then also in the house growing up, we would have National Geographics.
Oh, right. That's your dad.
Yeah. Well, my dad used to get them into the house. And both my parents really encouraged that side of things.
Very
so
good.
I was probably looking at National Geographics before I could read, to be honest, and looking at pictures and then eventually reading about the science then.
You're the youngest of four siblings. You're the baby of the house.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
is
yeah.
anybody else involved in science?
No, but everyone have an interest. You know, some are in education and others went into engineering and things like that. And I was kind of the only one who sort of maybe the slightly madder route of chasing the weather.
Very definitely into weather.
Yes.
And photography is also a passion of yours.
Yeah, I think a lot of that comes out of like that, the National Geographic, huge influence on me, both the photography, the artistic side of it, and then using that to communicate science as well.
So Sligo man, you went to University of Galway, is it NUIG?
I did. I was in Galway for my degree and then I was over in Reading for a master's and then eventually found my way over to Canada to my PhD over there.
Oh really? So what's the route? Science in Galway?
Science in Galway and then meteorology, so really focusing on the weather then in Reading.
Yes, yes, we can see the path.
Yes, and then in Canada, kind of as I got more into meteorology and realising climate was such a big question and something that needed to be addressed. So I was studying the impact of climate change on the loss of snow and ice. So I was working in the mountains in Canada and that was also kind of
a mixture. Sounds like a gorgeous job.
It was great. Like it was a mixture. You had a lot of outdoor time, a lot of adventure as well. You're probably noticing a theme here and how I like to do my science, you know. Yeah. But also it felt like it was important as well.
Because you were studying glaciers. Are they disappearing in Canada like they are in Europe?
Yes, and they're very interested in those because they depend on it for hydropower production, water supplies, agriculture, same as we do here in Europe. And they're really sort of dissolving before our eyes, really.
So how do you go from a love of glaciers to I want to go to the extreme weather happening now?
I think that they're both there in the background. But so I always had an interest. Growing up, the options to storm chase in Sligo were fairly limited. You know, I'd sort of pretend there was a thunderstorm coming over the hills. But after my first storm chasing trip proper in the States was after my graduation from my PhD. It was kind of like a treat to myself. And photography was something I was always interested in as well. Mm-hmm. So they're two really nice, they go really well together. So that was my first trip after my PhD and from then
was
on.
Was that in the places we expect, Oklahoma and
yes,
so on?
Yes, that's right. So the central states of the US, so they refer to them as sort of Tornado Alley. So it's like Oklahoma, Kansas, Texas. And you just get a merger of kind of the perfect conditions for these kind of thunderstorms, particularly this time of the year. And so if you really want to see spectacular storms, you kind of have to travel to see them.
Right. And you have to know what you're doing.
You do, yeah.
Helps having all these PhDs and so
it
on.
It does, yes. But even saying that, I wouldn't call myself, you know, I wouldn't say I know everything. Like, definitely not. I each time I go out, I try to go with people who have more experience because it's one of those things that you might know the science, but you really have to have spent time studying these storms to really understand and to be able to watch them. And to know what's happening.
So. And also the routes. You didn't need to know all of the roads. And
absolutely,
going,
yes. The navigation is as important as the science really over there because you want to know that you have a good route to follow the storm. But also if things turn and you decide I need to get out of this area pretty quickly, you want to make sure you have options pretty much in every direction. So knowing the road network is very important.
Does that mean you can't go storm chasing on your own?
So some people chase on their own, others will go with a group. I think it's better to go with others because you can dedicate one person to each job. I have done it on my own as well.
Have you?
And there is a kind of a freedom to that because particularly for me, because I'm going from a photography point of view. So I have the freedom basically to stop and say, oh, actually, this is a nice shot here. I'm going to take it without annoying other people, right?
Yeah. Because okay, I see what you mean.
That's my focus. I really want to get a nice shot. a nice shot.
And they're distant as well, aren't they? They're beautiful photographs because you've got the distant tumult and tempest. There's the foreboding skies where you've got a crack of light where it's normal daylight 1 minute and it's black, black clouds.
Exactly, yeah. And sometimes to see the best storm, you want to be back a little bit. So like I was saying before, like I'm not there necessarily to do research. So it doesn't make sense for me to be like super close under the storm because it is, you actually can't see anything under the storm. You're probably in heavy rain or hail or something like that. And you're putting yourself in danger as well. So for the most part, I will try and stay back a little bit.
Good man.
Particularly if I'm on my own. And you usually have a better viewpoint then.
You do have it. There is an academic purpose to the photographs, though, isn't there? You're not just going
totally. Thriller, so
risking all of this for nothing.
No, I find them a really good way in starting a conversation. So science communication is something I'm really interested in. And if you can draw people into that conversation without sort of starting by hitting them over the head with things they've already heard before, you know, if you want to talk to them about climate change, if you can show them something spectacular, like an amazing video of a storm or pictures, everybody seems to be interested in that. You know, I give talks in different places, both to public or in schools and things like that. And if you can show them an interesting picture of a storm, it pulls them in. And then you can start talking to them about the science behind it, you know, maybe get them interested in weather and climate, and then some of the more serious issues about why, say, climate change is important.
Yeah. The supercell, is that the name of the cloud? Is that an American expression? Do we have different
words? No, it's pretty global. Supercell basically means a thunderstorm that's rotating.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. So if you have a thunderstorm that rotates, a focusing of that rotation is what gives you a tornado.
Right.
So you're looking for those supercell storms. Yeah.
Is there anywhere else in the world you can go storm chasing, or is it only really
Tornado Alley? Tornado Alley is sort of the most consistent this time of the year in particular.
May and June, yeah.
Yes. But there are places like, for example, the Po River Valley in Italy, so northern Italy in Europe.
Really?
They get quite some decent storms
I
there.
Didn't know that, yeah.
Germany gets some as well. And, you know, we occasionally
doing more lightning storms rather than tornadoes.
Yes, exactly. Lightning and very big hail as well. Hail is another major risk of these storms.
Like, that's a huge thing in climate change, isn't it?
It is indeed.
The damage and risk to life and property.
It is. And you see it particularly over in the States. You see these cars driving past and houses and you think they actually look like they've been shot at. And it's actually hail damage. I was on a storm there a year or so ago and it had hail 10 centimetres in diameter. So this thing would destroy your car, you know, if you got in the wrong place. Yeah.
Were you in the car at the time?
I was, yes, but I wasn't near that part of it.
Wow, that's must have been an extraordinary thing to even be nearby. Are there many Irish storm chasers?
There's a lot of enthusiasm for storms in Ireland. I'd say those who actually go over and chase are limited enough. But there are some, there's a friend of mine, Paul, who he used to live over there and studied storms over there and has years of chasing experience, so he's a good resource. I've relied on him for lots of experience, but it's definitely growing. And even if when there's a thunderstorm or a series of thunderstorms in Ireland, you do see, I might be out with the camera, and you'll see other people out doing the same thing.
I see.
Yeah.
So it is lightning growing around yesterday.
There was indeed. Yes. Yeah.
As I'm obsessed with the rainfall radar. Yeah. And you get the crosses, the little orange crosses appear.
That's right. Yes.
That's
the
lightning strikes, which were across the Midlands.
Yeah.
And we'll experience a bit of that all through the summer if the conditions are.
Yeah. Exactly. We do get thunderstorms here, particularly during the summer. We don't generally have the same amount of energy that you need for the big storms that they get in
I
the US.
I was wondering, our storms are a bit lame, are they?
We have a lot of the conditions. So really for a thunderstorm, what you need is warm air below cold air. So it's a bit like if you put a pot on a stove and the warm air wants to bubble up, or the warm water wants to bubble up through the cold water. That's what you're seeing. Yeah. Same thing happens in the atmosphere. You get warm air below and it wants to bubble up through the cold air above. So in Ireland, we have lots of cold air above us. So it's kind of that relative difference. We don't have that much warm air, but it's warm relative to the cold air above it. So it wants to rise up.
That's why you come into the landlocked bits of Italy, Germany.
Exactly. Yes, exactly right. Yeah,
it's spectacular. Yeah. So you must have like storm chasing friends. There's a proper community, is there?
There is. It's certainly in the States. It's a huge community.
Yeah.
You've people from all kind of backgrounds. People who are in it from a research background. People who are there for the photography side of things. And some people have really educated themselves. They mightn't necessarily have a science background, but they've spent years themselves studying and researching it because they're interested. And I find that really impressive. You know, they've different jobs, but because of their love and their passion for it, they've educated themselves on it.
Because you work for Metairn.
I do indeed. Yes.
But when you're storm chasing, that's not on.
No,
Metairn's time.
It's what you would call a busman's holiday for sure. Yeah.
Take time off to do more work.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Have you been many times?
So I've been over to the States 3 times, and. I'm actually heading over at the end of this week.
Are you going this week?
Yes, yeah.
Because it is the middle of the season.
It is, yeah. So I'm just going for a week.
I gather you don't usually notify your family in advance.
I try not to overemphasize. I usually say, I'm going over to, you know, because they know I'm interested in photography. So I'm going over for the photography side of things. And then afterwards, when I come back, I'll show them the pictures. But no, I'm going over on Friday. And I'll be taking lots of pictures. I'll be putting them up on my social media and things like that as well.
Great. How do you make sure? What safety precautions do you take? Because you know what you're doing at this stage. You understand the weather. Is there a safe way to do it?
Yeah. So there's a few different things. One, in the car, I will have... they have an excellent radar network in the States.
Yeah.
So I have a radar feed coming into my car so I can see it's updated every few minutes so I can see exactly where the storms are relative
Very
to
important.
Where I am.
Yeah.
I'm constantly monitoring the road network, as I said, so I know that I have options north, south, east and west. And then also looking at the sky around you, not sort of getting tunnel vision, looking at this beautiful storm.
I see.
Because as has happened to me before, you're looking at this beautiful storm and another storm is forming behind you and your escape route is getting closed off. So you just have to know, you have to be good at making a call saying, I need to go now, I can't stay any longer.
You must be in a 4x4 then, I presume. You can only do it in...
Yes, it's recommended, but you want to avoid too much driving on, say, dirt or unpaved roads, things like that, because these storms, they produce so much rain a lot of the time that these roads can get very muddy.
Then you're stuck.
Exactly, and people do get stuck.
I was thinking that you need to get off-road. Route isn't...
You can, and sometimes you have to, but if I was doing that, I would be sure that I am... on the side of the storm that's not going to catch me because I'll be...
Good luck this week.
Thank you very much.
I hope you're safe and that the parents aren't too worried.
No. They'll be following along, I'm sure. Yeah.
And I highly recommend people to look at the existing storm pictures, although the new ones are clearly on the way. Big Skies Media, that's Instagram, I presume.
That's right, yes. At Instagram and my website as well,
Big Skies Media. But Noel Fitzpatrick, thanks a million and be safe over there.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
From the North, text studio, followed by your message to 80889.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
To you.
The one who hums songs while walking.
Who draws on the side of their coffee book.
Who builds cities out of sticks and stones.
Who thinks fast, bright, wild.
Or sits quietly with big dreams.
This day is for you. It's called Cruinne Union Oak.
A gathering of young people.
And it's a celebration of your imagination.
Because your voice is worth hearing.
And making something, anything, is magic.
Not to get points or praises.
Not to be the best.
We believe in invisible ideas.
The kind you feed in your belly.
We believe in Ireland's National Day of Creativity for Young Minds.
A day for making things that don't exist yet.
A song with no words.
A story with no ending.
A dance that's all yours.
A game you invented and never explained.
A robot made from cereal boxes.
A drawing that makes no sense.
You don't have to finish it.
You don't have to show anyone.
You just have to start.
Your ideas matter.
So today, take up space.
Be curious. Explore the possible.
And whatever you do, create something you love.
This day belongs to you.
On Saturday, June 7th, come find us.
Unleash your creative spark.
Find an event near you.
Cruinne.gov.ie.
In partnership with RTE.
RTE Radio 1.
In the Meadows, Royal Hospital Kilmainham, Saturday, June 7th. With Iggy Pop, Slow Dive, The Scratch, Gilliband, Sprints, Warm Doucher, Lambrini Girls, Billy No Mates, Troopa Troopa, Meryl Streak, plus special guest John Cooper Clark. Tickets available now, subject to licence, over 18s. See pod.ie.
Festival updates on RTE Radio 1.
Allow me to intercede.
Catch your ear.
Plant a seed.
And tell you of the days in June.
When a magical garden is soon to bloom.
RTE is at Bord Bia Bloom this June Bank Holiday weekend. Join Lyric FM's Marty Whelan, George Hamilton, Lorcan Murray, Liz Nolan and Simon Delaney. And enjoy lots more too with RTE Radio 1.
Summer in the city. What an idea.
Bloom is back. Created by Bord Bia.
RTE at Bloom 2025. Phoenix Park, Dublin. May 29th to June 2nd. RTE, your public service media.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're going to return to that story about Daniel McAnaspey and Katrina, who was in with us earlier on. What an inspiring, brave and resilient woman she is. A powerful and emotional story. The state needs to apologise to the family. I hope this is the case, as it's the outcome they all deserve. That's from Porrick. Well done to the McAnaspeys for shining a light on the failure of the state to support the most vulnerable children and our young people. I'm a teacher in Finglas and can see that kids badly need high-level care and intervention, and they're being failed by the state. Increased spending is needed. Social workers do a great job, but there's not enough of them. They are too stretched. Child protection needs huge investment. Another one, I'm sending Katrina a big hug. I feel so sorry for her and her family. Rest in peace, Daniel, says Mary. Art says, there are many Daniel McAnaspeys. They sleep rough on our streets. They go in and out of jail. There are many social workers who know what is needed. What's lacking is the required funding. And Aileen Dunn certainly seems to be one of those hardworking social care workers. A heartrending interview about Daniel, told with love, who gave us a picture of his life. He was let down by the system and a child abandoned. There won't be change until the HSE and others involved put their hands up and admit it's not working and overhaul it, says Anne. What a shame these families are not given the support they need from the start, because it costs the state a fortune to keep kids in care. If the money was put into community supports, workers and services, so much of this pain and suffering for these lovely young people could be avoided, says Catherine, speaking for a lot of people who know inside and out that story of Daniel McAnaspey and the others who need care and protection from now on. That's our lot for today. Oliver@rte.ie if you want to send longer messages at any stage at all. Claire is coming up next. Have a good Monday, and I'll chat you again tomorrow. Slán.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1. Listen back on the RTE Radio app.
RTE News on Radio 1 with Brian Jennings. Good morning. The Hamas-run civil defence agency in Gaza says more than 50 Palestinians, including children, have been killed in overnight Israeli airstrikes. In Gaza City, 33 people were killed and more than 60 others injured after a school sheltering hundreds of displaced people was struck. The Israeli military said it was targeting leading terrorists in the strike. It said it had taken steps to mitigate the risk of harming civilians. Separately, rescuers said 19 people were killed in an Israeli strike in a family home in the north of the enclave. Meanwhile, the UN agency, the World Food Programme, is calling on Israeli authorities to allow far greater volumes of food assistance into Gaza faster, more consistently, and to be transported along safer routes. The World Food Programme's country director for Palestine, Antoine Reynard, said people are simply waiting to die in Gaza because charities cannot help the population with the level of service that is required.
People are beyond desperation. They are waiting to die. And that's exactly what's currently happening in Gaza, because we are not able to serve the population with the level of assistance that is required. The message that they gave to me was very clear. We can't move anymore. We need assistance to reach us.
The family of Daniel McAnaspey, who was murdered 15 years ago while in the care of the state, has called for a formal state apology. Earlier this month, a jury in an inquest into the 17-year-old's death recommended the state carry out an urgent review of its approach to child protection and welfare. A verdict of unlawful killing was returned in the inquest, while the jury also made a number of other recommendations that, if implemented, could lead to changes in the delivery of child protection and education services. Speaking in RTÉ's Oliver Callan show, his sister Katrina said the family were seeking an apology for the failings highlighted in the inquest.
And I really, really don't want another family to have to go through this again, because the heartache we've went through for 15 years, I just